Hi, Elizabeth. John Wilbanks at the Berkman Center. I'm going to go ahead and start the webcast. Great. All righty. Well, we are online and rolling.
Yes, we are online. I'm the first one.
Okay, thanks. I'm going to be off the phone now, but you can talk to me. I'll be able to hear you over the real audio.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ben. Are we going to have Jonathan online?
No, Jonathan's not going to be online until a little later today, although I can, if you want me to conference him in, I can get in touch with him.
Okay. Just, you know, to keep conversation going.
Okay, sure. Okay, the feeds are running.
Hello.
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 Hello, this is Patricio Poblete from Santiago.
Bonjour, Patricio. Elizabeth Portenev online. You are the first one. I mean, I'm online with Ben Edelman.
Hello, Ben.
Hello. Hi, this is Victoria. Jonathan Cohen is actually coming. I'm just on in the interim before he gets here.
Hello. Bonjour, Victoria. Oh. Elizabeth online, Patricio Poblet online, and Ben Edelman online.
Hi, Elizabeth. Hi, Patricia. Hi, Ben.
Hello. Is somebody joining?
Hi. Hiro Hota is joining.
Bonjour, Hiro Hota.
Yes. How are you?
Elizabeth Portenev online. We have Patricio Poblet from Chile, and we have Victoria Carrington from Canada. And Ben Edelman from Webcast.
Okay.
Elizabeth, I just want to say I think you're doing a tremendous job with everything. I can't believe you did all this work.
Thank you very much, Victoria. I don't know if you know, but I am calling you from Warsaw in Poland.
Oh, you're kidding. What are you doing?
No, I am not kidding, and I can do it thanks to my Polish colleague from Polish Registry. Well, and I just learned from email that Raul will not be here, so I have to make some minutes. And if somebody else could help me,
I
would be really grateful.
I can help you with that also. I think Nigel also wrote an email that he won't be on.
Yes, you are right. Hello.
Hello, who's this?
Elizabeth Portenev online. We have Patricio Poblet from Chile, Victoria Carrington from Canada, Hiro Hota-san from Japan, and Ben Edelman from Webcast.
Hi there. Hello, Ben. How are you? Ken Stubbs.
Bonjour, Ken.
Listen, Andrew McLaughlin needed the phone number, and I forwarded it to him this morning. If somebody has a phone number for Andrew somewhere, it might be a good idea to give him a call. Ben, you might very well have that number.
I've got it on hand right here.
Yeah.
1-7-4-9-5-4-9-3-5.
Hold on for just a second, okay?
Okay.
Hello. Who's joining?
Hi, Tracy Swinehart joined.
Hi, Teresa.
Javier.
Bonjour, Caroline. Bonjour, Javier.
John at the Berkman Center. I will try to reach Andrew.
Thanks. Elizabeth, my stay in Paris was so short, I had no time to call anybody. So
I apologize. You want to give me the number one more time?
Yeah, it's 617-495-4935.
All righty, fine. I'll have a call at 6 o'clock in the morning in Los Angeles, but hopefully... and see if I'm going to reach you. I'm going to put you guys on hold, and I'll be back in the conference in a couple minutes.
Okay. Hey, good morning. Who else online?
Good morning, Elizabeth.
Yes, Dennis.
Dennis Jennings here.
Yes, I will recapitulate. We have Victoria Carrington. We have Hiro Hota-san. We have Patricio Poblet, Ken Stubbs, Caroline Chikwan, Xavier Sola, and Dennis Jennings. Who else?
Teresa Swinehart.
Teresa Swinehart. Good morning, Teresa.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, that's Amadeu.
Bonjour, Amadeu.
Ça va en Pologne?
Ça va très bien, Amadeu, en Pologne. Heureusement que j'ai eu de l'aide de la part de mes collègues polonais.
Oh, les félicitations de la part de l'EMS Council aux collègues polonais. On est le premier?
I just congratulate for everybody.
Hold on.
We have Victoria Carlson.
Just a moment. Who's coming now?
This is Richard Lossy from the Registrar Constituency.
You spoke at the same time.
One was Richard.
Richard.
Richard. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Hello.
Hi, Richard.
And Steph Shapiro? No, who else?
Uh-oh. Someone's down somewhere. Don't answer the phone.
Yeah?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Yeah, hi everybody, it's Johnny.
Hello, John.
Hi, John.
Hi. Hi.
Where now that? In California?
I'm in Redwood City, California, yes.
Hmm. It's early in the morning, yeah?
Yes, 6 a.m., but that's not too bad.
Is that John Anglin? It's normally late at night for me.
Remember me?
Is that John Anglin?
Did it? Remember me?
Oh, no, no. I thought John Anglin was just a figment of my imagination. I thought he had passed on someplace. Well, that's Ken Stubbs, perhaps?
No, Ken Stubbs is not with us anymore now. We've got America Online keeping me pretty busy these days.
I'll bet you are. Yeah. But you at home, isn't that AT&T or something like that?
Site at home.
Huh?
What?
What's the name of the organization you're with now?
Yeah, it's Excite at Home.
Excite at Home. Well, it's a porno site, yeah? Exciting at Home. Amateur porno site.
It sounds like that.
Hi, yes, I'm Catherine. I'm calling in for Michael for a while until he can join because he's on the road.
Okay. I am Catherine.
Yeah, I always wanted to walk and work for a pornography site, you know?
Yeah.
My first big opportunity.
Is Dennis Jennings in yet?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, Dennis. How are you this morning, sir?
Hi there. Is that Ken?
Yes, it is.
Trying to recognize all the voices.
I've been getting emails all morning from people saying they're not going to be able to make it. Hopefully, they're also copied you so that you know who's not going to be on the call at this point in time.
Okay, I haven't seen those messages. I've been out of circulation.
All right, let me tell you who's not going to be on the call.
All
Nigel's emailed in and said that he's not going to be able to make it.
Okay.
Rolla Echeverria indicated that he was not going to be making
the
call as well. Now, those are the only two that
and
I
Jonathan.
Know. Well, Jonathan.
No, sorry. Ted Shapiro, I think.
Yeah, Ted Shapiro also emailed in and said he was traveling and won't be able to make it as well either.
Okay.
He gave the proxy for Caroline, yeah, so we still have all this proxy issue open. Right.
Fortunately enough, we don't vote. So
Nigel gave his proxy to you, Dennis.
Okay, but we're not going to vote, folks, I hope.
I hope not either today. I just need some guidance. I'm getting phone calls on a regular basis. People want asking me how the whole system is supposed to work, and I have to tell them that at this point in time, I'm not really certain. So,
it's simple. We will select, the names council will select the best three nominees for the board.
Yes.
It's that simple.
It's that simple. But I have a whole bunch of questions, and I'll ask them
at the appropriate
time.
Yes.
And I guess we're operating, are we not, off of the agenda that Elizabeth posted about 3 or 4 days ago?
Yes, and Elizabeth, thank you very much for doing that. And also, thank you. Is YJ on the phone? Yes?
YJ is on the phone, I hear, but she isn't very clear.
Okay.
Me too.
We don't hear you, YJ.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes,
I hope everything is all right. I understand you had horrible earthquakes there, and they're still getting a lot of aftershocks.
Well, it's in Taiwan. It's not in Korea.
She said she was in Taipei.
Yeah.
Oh.
I can't hear you, YJ, I'm afraid.
Oh.
And there's a lot of clipping on the line, people, so...
Why don't you try to call again, YJ, to see whether you get a better line? It's impossible to hear you.
Okay, YJ, thank you. Now, I was going to say thank you to YJ for proposing that we have time slots on the agenda, and thank you, Elizabeth, for the agenda. I'll try and stick to the time slot. I think at this early stage in our teleconferences, it's more important that we get critical things done than that we necessarily stick to the time scale, but I'll try.
Dennis, I have a motion there. As I said before, I want to put my motion to sleep on the Dominion World Housing until we get rid of the procedures for Icon Board, what are more urgent.
Yes.
And then the next day, the next minute that we get all dissolved, I will propose that in the mailing list, that we vote on the mailing list of that.
Okay.
But I think it's a waste of time to use teleconference today on that issue.
Yeah.
Also, Dennis, I agree with you 100%. I would like to propose a format for conference calls in the future. It seems like the majority of the members of the Names Council are able to make a commitment for a conference call that at least goes through the first hour. It also seems to take about 10 minutes of the first hour just to get everybody together and get everybody into the call.
Yes.
I would propose that we prioritize in the future those items which we really need to get as much of a consensus and airing out, and try to get them done in that window of opportunity that we have in the first hour, because I have a feeling that the second hour people tend to drop off very quickly.
Yes, and then that makes it difficult to interpret what we actually agreed.
That's right.
Yeah, actually, can I agree with that proposal? Because last time I was a little bit confused about what was discussed after I had to jump off and...
Well, I thought we'd reached some agreement, and people certainly disagreed that we had reached that agreement. So we need to be a little careful, I think. And Ken, I think you're right. The first hour and 15 minutes is where we really do work, and that's what we should focus on.
Sounds good.
Who's joining? Somebody else is online.
Well, Jay, it's still difficult to hear you. Well, it's not difficult, it's impossible.
Yes, I'm sorry, no. YJ. We hope you're all right if you're in Taipei, but we can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Can you hear us?
YJ? This is Ken Scuds. I'm going to give you an alternate number. You can dial this number from Taiwan, okay? Try this number and see if you get a better port, okay? The phone number is, in the United States, area code 800-895-9520. Your passcode is the same as it was, 6183#. You may get a better port.
And just so people know, I'm a conference call or a telephone that has a speakerphone, so just so you're aware of that.
Who's that on a speakerphone?
I'm on a cell phone right now, but I'm about to jump on a speakerphone.
Okay.
Has Andrew joined us yet?
Yes, indeed.
Wonderful. I would suggest, Dennis, that we put Andrew right up there on one of the first things we deal with.
Yes, I think so. Right, let's get start, folks, if we may. We have an agenda in front of us. The first item is discussion and adoption of agenda, and I think the sense of the meeting is that we should prioritize. Since Andrew is here, I propose to take item 3 first. I think Amadeo has asked that his motion be dealt with on email, so that takes item 5 out. And I wonder whether we shouldn't take item 9, the election of the ICANN board members, next, and then reprioritize after that.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
So it's my number one priority to say the truth. Yeah.
So we're focusing on item 3 in the agenda and item 9 in the agenda at this time. the, is there anything arising from the minutes that people want to bring up now, from the notes and the minutes that were published, or can we leave that until after we've dealt with the important things?
This is Don Talaj, just joined the line.
Hello, Don. Welcome.
Hi, Don.
Hello, Don.
Hello, Elizabeth. Hello, Dennis.
My suggestion is that issues with the minutes are better dealt in writing.
I would agree with that, Amadeo. Does anybody object to dealing with issues on the minutes in writing on the email list?
No.
All right, then I propose that we deal with that on the email list and go straight to item 3, the election of the permanent names council members, with participation from Andrew McLaughlin. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Now... who wants to lead off on this?
Would it be helpful for me to just give a summary of where we are from the ICANN side?
Yes, please.
Okay. I at this point have received 4 applications for permanent recognition of the constituency groups. 3 of them I have not received. And in addition, we've received 1 application for a geographic diversity waiver and have been discussing a second. I think maybe it would be most helpful if I just go through what my understanding of each of the constituencies is, and then I can tell you what I've been able to get from the board, and then you all can tell me where I'm wrong. We'll start off, since Don's on the phone, we received an application from the GTLD constituency because there's only 1 member. The constituency hasn't adopted any formal procedures. And that's fine with the board. That one, I'm sure the board will approve without any further questions. On the non-commercial domain name holders constituency, we received what is essentially a duplicate of the proposal that the board accepted in San Diego, along with a commitment to hold elections within 6 months. As the board had indicated in San Diego, that's fine with the board so long as the understanding is that the next 6 months are going to be used to conduct the kind of outreach and to prepare for elections in the way that presumably the other constituency groups are supposed to have been doing. And the question that Amadeu raised about whether or not a constituency group would be permanent or provisional during that kind of a period, what my understanding of the board's intentions on that is, and this is not having spoken with them, but having spoken with enough of them that I think I'm confident saying this, the board intends to make the names council a permanent names council for purposes of electing DNSO directors to the ICANN board, even if 1 or 2 of the constituencies still have not held what we would consider to be permanent elections for their names council representatives, and that those constituencies won't be precluded or in any way, they won't be precluded from voting, nor would they have their votes diluted by virtue of the fact that they're yet to have their permanent names council member elections. So specific to the non-commercial constituency, then, their proposal is that they be given 6 months to hold their elections, and the board, I think, is willing to go along with that. We've received applications from the IT and the business constituencies. I have been promising them an answer from the board. The difficulty for us is that it's very hard to get all the board members together for a teleconference. And since we hadn't received all of the applications, we were hoping that we would be able to do them together in a package. I've now routed around that problem by going to the board's executive committee. And both the IP and the business constituency proposals are fine with one caveat for each of them that has to do with geographic diversity. And this is simply in the nature of clarifying something in the charters. In the case of the business constituency, their geographic diversity provision says that that the 3 names council representatives have to come from businesses whose principal place of business is in the 3 regions. Now, that is in 3 different regions. That's, of course, fine if a constituency wants to approve an additional geographic diversity requirement on top of what the bylaws say. There's obviously no problem with that. However, I wanted to make clear to the business constituency that they still do have to abide by the bylaws, which say that citizenship is the test for geographic diversity. So the bottom line is that the result still has to be that the three representatives are citizens of three different regions. And on the IP constituency, there's simply an ambiguity in the bylaws where they say that the three IPC representatives have to be from three different regions. And I would just suggest to them that they add as provided in the ICANN bylaws so that it's clear that whatever the bylaws says is the test for geographic diversity. Maybe why don't I just finish my list and then I'll...
Please, Andrew, I think go through it and then we'll take questions for clarification.
Okay, so next we've received an application for a geographic diversity waiver from the CCTLD constituency. In this case, they've already held their elections and the result was that two of the three come from Europe and or are citizen countries in Europe. And an application was made from Rob Hall for a waiver as to Nigel Roberts, who I believe the reason for that, I think, is that he was the number three vote-getter in the single transferable vote procedure that the constituency used. What I've gotten the board to or at least the executive committee of the board to agree to, is that a 90-day waiver to get us through this election period is acceptable. But beyond that, the board doesn't want to grant a waiver because it doesn't see any reason why it's impracticable for the CCTLD constituency to conform to bylaws. And I'm not sure exactly how to handle this. I'd like to be able to handle it through some kind of friendly discussion with the CCTLD constituency. But among the options are, of course, running a new election. A less burdensome option is simply adjusting the single transferable vote rules that they use and taking the three highest vote getters from three different regions, which as a practical matter would mean, I think, replacing the third highest vote getter with the next vote getter from a different region. But in any event, that's something that we don't need to worry about at the moment. But the principle of at least a 90-day waiver to get us through these elections is fine with the executive committee. We also received a request, I don't think it's been a formal request yet, but there's been some discussion with the registrar constituency. The issue here is that the global dispersion of accredited registrars is not very wide. Virtually all of them are in North America or Western Europe. There is a very small number of them from Asia. And the question is, does that present a basis for a waiver? And the answer of the executive committee is, yes, at least up to this 90-day period. How to handle that in the future on a more permanent basis, I think it's still open for discussion. I think that there's a better case for impracticability from the registrars, but again, I don't think the full board has had a chance to consider that, and at the moment we're just talking about the views of enough of the people, enough of the board members to give me some sense of what the board intends to do. The bottom line, I think, is that the board really does want to enforce the geographic diversity provision. Some of the constituencies have gone to great lengths to do that, including the famous standing aside of Siegfried Langenbach back in Berlin to allow the business constituency to conform. And I think that there's a sense that if the board's not even handed in applying those rules, there will be some feeling of favoritism by some of the constituencies. So let's see. I think I've gone through all seven. Is there anybody that I've left off the list?
No, I just have a question. That's Amadeo here, Andrew. I think there was a misunderstanding within our constituency because we thought somehow that the September 15 deadline was for amendments to the charter. As we are not amending it, we are submitting exactly the same. We thought it was not necessary to formally resubmit it.
I think you should, in order to be consistent with the board's resolution, Amadeo, you all should send me a formal application, which
okay. I will ask Max Palas to do that. And only to clarify that, that our problem with the geographical diversity, I mean, we have that in the bylaws. We only have one person who's a member of the constituency who's a resident and a citizen in Asia-Pacific, because some of the most of the Japanese registers we have are represented by U.S. citizens. And unlike non-commercial or commercial ISPs, and very much like CCTLDs and GTLDs, we have a predefined membership. We cannot invent a registrar if they have not applied. And having an election for with only one possible candidate who was not able, even not sure to be willing to run, was somehow strange. Okay, but having thought that you are considering a 90 days extension, but in that case, what happens if there are no more registrars from that region?
Well, I think, I think my answer to that is that the idea is that, well, the board is definitely sensitive to the fact that there are unfairnesses and bizarre results created by the geographic diversity requirement, no matter which way you do it. If you do it as citizens, you get some results like you're talking about. If you do it as residents, there are other ways that it turns out to be unfair. The board is interested in doing a full-scale review of that policy, but actually the comments have been very few and far between. It was raised in Berlin and then again in prior to Santiago, and I think the board is going to make a more concerted effort to try to get public comments prior to the Los Angeles meetings. But nevertheless, the bottom line at the moment is that the bylaws are there. There is a waiver, you know, there is a waiver provision. And if the registrar constituency really can't figure out any way to make it work, then those are the conditions under which you would apply for a permanent waiver.
Okay, now, can I just recap, because I didn't catch the ISP's address.
Oh, sorry, that's the other one. And I have not received an application from the ISP's. Maybe, again, there's some misunderstanding about what's required, but even if the ISPs want to use the same set of rules, there needs to be some formal notification of that to the board so that the board can review and act on it.
I just joined in, Michael Schneider.
Michael, yes.
I'm sorry that I missed what you're talking about, but what you're exactly missing from the ISPs?
To the best of my knowledge, I haven't received an application to the board for final recognition of your constituency.
Right, you have.
I have received it?
You have received it with CC to Esther Dyson and Mike Robbins.
Hmm. All right, well then that makes it easy. That means that I can add another one to the list of ones we've received. The plan is for the executive committee to meet by internet, maybe as early as today, and so... I have contacted the constituencies that have any problems, and I know that the rules that we had for the ISPs, Michael, were fine, so there's no reason, no need to think that there revisions are necessary. And with the business and IP constituencies, they're going to be approved by the executive committee with my one caveat about clarifying their geographic diversity rules to make sure that they specify that they're to be in compliance with the bylaws.
Right. Make a comment here, Dennis?
Yes, Ken?
It's Don Talaj.
Oh, beg your pardon, Don. I beg your pardon.
Ken and I often get confused for each other. Andrew, relative to Amadeo's comment on the registrar constituency, is this not just another example of the similar situation applied to the GTLD registry constituency? That is, it's hard to impose a diversity when there are members, and maybe our efficient Asian registrars, that region doesn't get AC.
That would be one way to go about it. I mean, the rule with regard to limiting, that was Amadeo's suggestion. No, it wasn't. It was a related suggestion in a different context.
But Andrew, if I may cut in here, rather than discuss in detail the various applications, I think what we really need to know is where we stand, and I think you've clarified that.
Yes, Ken Stutz, may I ask?
Can I take a cue now? Ken?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Anybody else want to come in after Ken?
Richard, I have a question for Richard.
Richard, Ken, you have the phone.
Okay, I want to make certain that I understand exactly what the 90-day waiver means, okay?
The
this point in time in the registrar constituency, we're in the process of holding elections again for members of the Names Council. What you're telling us, in effect, is that any election that we hold today with respect to any potential VA, I won't use the term violation, but exception that's created as a result of this election, in effect, it would be for a period, it would be tolerated, in effect, for a period of 90 days, so that if we have an election today, and if two members from the registrar constituency were, according to ICANN's current bylaws, citizens of one region, even though they may represent corporations with a, and even be residents in another region, that that situation would be allowed to exist for 90 days, and it, at the end of 90 days, it would have to have been remedied based on what your current understanding is. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, it's even my understanding is a little looser than that, which is that for sure everybody's got a 90-day, well, I shouldn't say everybody, for sure the registrars and the CCTLDs can have a 90-day waiver, which is essentially designed to get us through this election period without too much disruption. And if the registrar constituency concluded that for some reason, has concluded that it needs a permanent waiver for some period of time significantly longer than that on the grounds of impracticability, which is the standard in the bylaws, then the registrar constituency should make that application. But I should just note up front that the board is not really very happy about waivers and is looking to come up with some other solution that allows each constituency to comply with the bylaws rules.
So, okay, Richard?
Yes, I'd just like to confirm, am I correct in my understanding that the bylaws originally stated the terms were residency and then they were changed, I believe in Santa Edward, to read citizenship?
No, not to my knowledge.
Dennis, it's Jonathan. Can I get in?
Certainly, Jonathan. Let me take a cue first. Jonathan, anybody else after Jonathan? Jonathan, you have the phone.
I'm on there. Okay, Andrew. You haven't received it yet, but we are going to be requesting a waiver of a reasonably short duration. The reason being simply that we didn't decide until London, our meeting in London 10 days ago, about fundamentals of our Constitution, including who could be a member. We have a backlog of applications of more new members than our existing members, and we don't want to hold an election until we can approve those members and get them in and give them an opportunity to field candidates and have a proper election. So our intention was to simply, what we did was confirm our current members. And we'll be asking for a waiver in which we say we not only will we comply with the bylaws, but we'll hold new elections no later than a certain date. And that date, I think we picked, was March 31st, although we hope to hold them earlier in the new year. Is that the kind of thing that's going to get by, I trust?
Well, certainly, I'm sure that if the executive committee is giving 90-day waivers to the others, there'll be a 90-day waiver for the IPC to get us through the election period. But as to the long-term... Jonathan, let's just take it off online and bring it up with the board. I don't feel comfortable speaking for them without...
No, I understand. I'm not asking you to answer. I'm simply saying our position was simply that there are very good reasons why we don't want to do it immediately, but we will definitely comply within 5 months.
All right. Well, I would say, but you should include that in a formal, you know, application.
I have. It's just being circulated.
Yeah,
it'll be in probably today.
Fine. And I think for purposes, of doing planning for this round of board elections, I think you should presume that the executive committee will give you at least the 90 days to get through that period.
90 days from when?
From whenever the executive committee votes, which I'm hoping is going to be today.
Well, in summary, Andrew, Dennis Andrew here, in effect, we have a permanent names council, although some of them are only provisional, some of the constituencies are only provisionally recognized. And there is, for this coming election, because of the 90-day waivers, nobody's precluded from voting, and there's no dilution of voting in the coming election for the ICANN board.
That's correct, with one note, which is that I think what the board is going to do is grant final accreditation to all of the constituencies, and some of them subject to requirements that they hold new elections within certain periods of time in order to fulfill the basic idea of due outreach and then hold a fair election.
Right. Is everybody happy with that summary?
Yes, even the ones sending the provocation to the list.
I'm gonna re-clarify something. I'm sorry. Please don't get too irritated with me. As far as I'm concerned, then, with respect to the registrar constituency, with respect to the current nominations and voting procedures that we have with the registrar constituency, I'm going to treat it as status quo for a 90-day period from the time that the board authorizes that extension, Andrew.
Right. I think that you can proceed under the plans that you've been operating under. Assume that that the geographic diversity requirement is waived at least as to one person to allow you to take account of the
sure.
geographic diversion the dispersion that you've already got. And I think that Ken, I think that Amadeu and Richard and you and I should take up offline the question of what to do beyond those 90 days, given that you're now holding elections.
Fine, because there's, like you said, a lot of frustration in the registrar constituency because, as Don Talaj indicated, we're pretty well, how do we put it politely? We're stuck with what we have. We can't invent, you know. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate you all letting me
okay.
clarify that.
Any further questions or clarification on this item on the agenda?
You mean the reports from the constituencies and where we stand?
Yes.
No, now we know what we still miss at the ice, some kind of clarification about CCTLDs and IPC. We got that.
Right.
So now we know where each constituency stands.
I should like to come in at a point again, very briefly.
Who's that, sorry?
Michael Schneider.
Michael, sorry, I beg your pardon, Michael.
I've just forwarded the email concerning the request for final approval to Andrew again and Cecilia to the list so that you can see where we stand. And I would like to briefly report what we are doing with regards to the elections of the final officers and the final representatives to the Names Council. We have opened nominations period in early September. We have had six nominees. Five of them are running for a post. We have now the first period of election, meaning that people are this week electing the chairman of the constituency, and in the next week we will have elections for the two deputies. And that means that in roughly 2 weeks, that means just in time, we will be able to provide the final names of the three representatives to the Names Council through the Council and the Board.
I have a question. The chair and the deputies are also at the same time the representatives within the Names Council, right?
Currently, yes. We have had a lengthy discussion on that issue during our last meeting in Santiago. There has been some voices requiring us to change the articles or at least provide a draft for a change that's ongoing. I think we will end up with having five officers, three of them being representatives to the Names Council, but this will be subject to further discussion. What we did in Santiago is vote clarified that whoever is going to be named and appointed to the Names Council currently may lose his post as being an officer of the constituency according to the change that we are going to apply to the articles.
Okay.
Okay. Now, could I, as chair, just ask to go through the constituencies and see who has already elected their Names Council members who will be in place for the election of the board and who have yet to do so? Michael, I understand from your comments that the ISCs will have three new Names Council members in time for the election of
right.
the board members. Is that correct?
Right.
And Michael, is it, just to head off any problems before we get there, your election rules do provide that the three resulting representatives will be citizens of three different regions?
Right, of course.
Okay.
We have seen some inconsistencies between our articles and the decisions of the board, but we are now trying to bring them in line, and at least for the ongoing elections, we will be able to provide to provide candidates who will be will come from different regions in terms of the way the board is seeing it.
Okay, can I go through the other constituencies then? The CCTLD constituency, three people that are now on the Names Council will be the three people who are on the Names Council at the time of the election. May change later after the 90 days. The business constituency. Are two elections going to be held before the vote of the board? That's the question.
Yes, they will. We will have elected our representatives by October 8th.
So we may have the same three or we have a different three for the election.
Well, definitely a few will not be the same.
Okay. Don, I presume that you'll elect yourself?
Well, the last three people I tried to appoint to this job quit in protest, so I guess I'll have to stay.
Non-commercial, have we anybody on the phone from non-commercial?
My understanding is that those three will be there for the election.
Okay.
They have said very clearly they are holding elections on February next year.
Yes, thank you. Registrars?
We are currently running the election. We'll have new members by October 8th.
And the IP constituency?
The three we have now will be there until we hold new elections.
Okay. So is that clarify everything for everybody? Andrew, do you want to add anything?
No, the only thing that I would add is that the Names Council should think about whether revision to the basic geographic diversity rules is required and how to do it. This is something the board would very much like some comment on. I know that the Governmental Advisory Committee is coming up with some kind of advice on how to do geographic diversity across the board, both at the board level, the SO Council level, and the at-large membership level.
Okay, well, we take that request. We'll minute that. There's a request from Andrew McLaughlin that the Names Council consider the geodiversity rules, whether they should be changed, and if so, how they should be changed. Is that correct, Andrew?
Right on.
Thank you.
Dennis, Jonathan.
Yes, Jonathan.
I just want to note that I think that I'm concerned that the board, by pushing for the new Names Council elections before the election of the ICANN board, may end up with the difficult situation that there may be a large number of new Names Council members who not only don't have experience with Names Council, which is inevitable, but who may not be in a position to know a number of the candidates for the ICANN board as well as one might like on an election of this significance.
I think all we can do is note that.
That's right. That's all we can do.
With the permission of the participants, I'd like then to close item 3.
Second.
Hey, Dennis?
Yes?
I did have one more question for Andrew,
please,
if I could.
Yes?
How does that work? I know that if somebody is on the Names Council and elects in a candidate for the ICANN board, that they then need to step down from the Names Council position.
Yeah, this is an overlap between items 3 and item 9.
Okay.
If I take it under item 9, because I think it's the very first question that arises, yep. Teresa, under item 9.
Yeah.
I jumped the gun. Okay.
Okay. So, Andrew, could you actually address that question? That Teresa,
yeah, what the ICANN staff has posted as a recommendation to the board, and it's one that I should say that the board has thought about and unless I'm sadly mistaken, the board intends to approve these proposed amendments. The staff has posted 5 different amendments to the bylaws that essentially clarify and we hope in one case make easier the process of getting the SO elected directors on the board. The first change was to make the 15-day notification period a 7-day notification period to allow the SOs about an additional week before in which to elect the directors in October. The next one was to make clear that the basic bylaws provisions for geographic diversity on the ICANN board itself will be borne by the at-large directors and not by the SO directors. There was some question about the aggregate geographic diversity rules as they apply to the whole ICANN board, and so we've said that the requirement of one director per region will be fulfilled on the at-large side at a minimum. And next, the one which is, I think, probably the most of the greatest interest at the moment, which is a pair of amendments to Article 6, Section 4, that says, first, that no one can serve simultaneously as a member of an SO council and a director. This is something that I think we all thought was implied by the bylaws, because of the bylaws provision that says that a director elected to the ICANN board serves the entire corporation and not the interests of the supporting organization that elected her. So this amendment makes that clear. The second one is just a basic principle of fairness and conflict of interest. And it says that when a person has accepted a nomination to be considered to serve on the board, that person cannot participate in any discussion or vote of the supporting organization council relating to the selection of directors. I'm sure we'll want to come back to that. Let me just point the last proposed amendment, which is that at any given, it's a restatement of the provision of geographic diversity that already applies to the DNSO, and that would extend it to the ASO and the PSO. So we don't need to worry about it on this call.
Thank you, Andrew. Can I take those one at a time and see whether there's any controversy or any need to discuss it? Is there any need to discuss the 7-day notice, 15-day to 7-day notice change, or does everybody find that acceptable? Does anybody find it unacceptable? I think we have one there, Andrew. The fact that the aggregate rules on geodiversity will be solved by the at-large directors, I don't think it's terribly relevant. I don't think we can have any objection, but is there any objection or question on that?
Patricia here?
Yes, Patricia.
I've heard some objections from people in my region where they feel that this is postponing somehow the really fulfilling the geographical diversity rule in the board. You know, there's been concern from day one that there is no one from Latin America in the ICANN board. And by adding that this is going to happen when the at-large members are elected and not before that, and not guaranteeing that it happens before that, it's been a source of some concern. I have to report on that.
Well, I think it's a totally valid concern, and I think that it does have the effect that you say, Patricio. The difficulty from our perspective is that the board doesn't want to be in a position of telling any individual SO which regions it can or cannot elect board members from. Each SO only has 3 directors and not 5, and so it's not feasible to tell each SO to have one member from each region, for example. And because the SOs elect their directors at different times, you don't want to penalize some SO or treat it differently because it happens to elect its directors third in sequence rather than first in sequence. So the reason behind it is basically just a recognition that the SOs ought to have autonomy within the bounds of the rule. But it's certainly a concern that we've heard on this end as well.
Any other questions? Patricia, are you objecting to it, or do you want your...
No, I was just reporting on concerns I have seen. Okay.
I think we should note those for the record. Now, the next item is can't serve simultaneously. Any questions of clarification or objections?
Don Talaj.
Don.
Yeah, I guess my comments on that, Andrew, which I have resisted posting, but since I have you personally, let me make them in front of the Names Council. I can see the intent of the provision. I was a little disturbed to have it
characterized as a clarification, since I think it's a stronger import than a clarification. I think it's really a significant change, and I'm glad to see that you're taking it up with the Names Council in order to discuss it a bit. The only provision of it that really seems to be onerous to me is the provision that bars a nominated Names Council member from voting in the election.
That's the next item, Don.
Oh, is it? I'm sorry. I thought they were together.
No, no, they're actually two separate items. I'd like to take them separately because
I'm going to reserve my
Amadeo here.
Yes, Amadeo.
Andrew, I have a question. There was an all-time understanding that this was the best solution, but also in order to, I mean, we know that the boards represent the whole corporation, but the fact that there are SOs appointing directors also mean that they also can be used as a channel of echoing and reporting concerns and interests. And my understanding was that, for instance, there were not members of the Names Council that probably they should be invited to, perhaps not all, but many of the teleconferences and meetings in order to get some kind of coordination for them to know what the Names Council and through the Names Council what the DNSO really feels about this or that issue. Do you think that this kind of, let's say, non-voting observer status within the meetings is any problem? In the fact, all meetings are open, so it's not a legal question, just to know whether this is a special problem.
Yeah, I see no problem with that.
Okay, thanks.
So I don't think anybody sees any problem, though if they do, please speak up with the fact that with the bylaw that says you can't serve simultaneously as a Names Council member and as a board member. Does anybody object to that?
With respect to the election process, though, if a member of the Names Council elects to run for the ICANN board, they retain their status on the Names Council until if they are elected to the board. Is that not correct? And they have the only question that we have is the point that we're talking about next, and that is their ability to vote in the election for the board. Is that correct?
Well, Andrew, could you clarify that?
Yeah, I mean, the prohibition is simply that you can't serve as the two at the same time. And so if a Names Council member is elected director, then has to pick between the two. And if a director is elected to the Names Council, same thing.
Okay.
In fact, Andrew, you have seen that we are requesting to all the nominees to clearly specify that statement in their acceptance statement. In the fact that now it's not in the bylaws, or at least it's not clear.
Now, Don, can I take you now on the nominees who can't vote for themselves or for or vote at all on the names if they're on the Names Council?
Yeah, it seems heavy-handed and unnecessary to me. I can understand the non-serving together. That's very clear from a lot of reasons. But I just would like to ask Andrew what the rationale. Am I still on the line yet? What the rationale is for barring a constituency. Well, let me give you an example. I mean, not that this is necessarily the case, but if the GTLD constituency decided to nominate me for a board seat, then that constituency would have no vote in the election.
Well, let me first start by saying, Don, that this, I agree with you that this one is not a simple clarification. This requirement is in response to a number of comments that the board's received in different sorts of ways. The justification is as follows. The basic principle of conflict of interest is that you should not, when you're a member of a council that makes policy decisions or something of that nature, the members of the council should not vote on a matter in which the member has a direct personal interest in the outcome. That's a basic principle of American corporate law, and it embodies the idea that people on the inside of the council have special advantages over people on the outside of the council. They can swap votes, and they have a familiarity with the members, which can advantage them in the election process. It was the feeling of the ICANN board in response to, I shouldn't say the board, but a number of the members of the board in response to comments they'd received that they feared that the SO elections were going to be very closed events featuring significant advantages for those that were already on the inside and help them. So the idea here is that the that those who have a direct personal stake in the outcome ought not to also be able to vote on it. As to your question of disenfranchising the SOs, that is a concern, and it's not the board's intention to deprive anybody of a vote. And so, you know, the simple procedure under our bylaws is that each SO can choose directors in any way the SO wants. Constituency can choose names council members in any way the constituency wants. And so if somebody is going to be nominated for the board, that person ought to step aside and be replaced, at least temporarily, for purposes of conducting the vote.
There's a problem here.
One at a time, Amadeo.
Three of the relatives are
coming. Amadeo?
Sorry.
Can I get a list? Amadeo, who's next?
Ken after Amadeo, please.
Don.
Don.
Teresa.
Teresa.
Donovan.
Donovan. All right, Amadeo.
Anybody else? Let me say that, Andrew, this is a completely unheard provision from my side. I never heard something like that in any electoral process, be that political or corporate. I can't imagine, stockholders, shareholders being unable to vote for themselves to a board, which somehow would be more or less the closest equivalent. But here there's another problem. We are running the nomination process in parallel. So imagine that Mikhail, who would be a very good candidate for, let's say, the European slot, I don't know what's happening there in their constituency, but, you know, we are, for instance, registered running nominations for both. So you are not a member of anything. You are not sure about anything, but simply you can leave your constituency in a position that in October 8th, the day that most of the electoral processes are closed, you are depriving them because you don't have time to run a new election. And then you would have Dennis or Michael or who else? Jonathan is now also nominated, or myself, even if I have not accepted yet, depriving our constituents because simply we won't have material time to select somebody else.
Okay, can I take the other comments first, Andrew, before you respond? Ken?
Yes, I'm also concerned because not just in a case like that are you dealing with depriving the constituencies, but there are situations where the SOs have a very limited representation by certain regions, and if someone who is a member of an SO who is also a member of a specific region is nominated, you then take the region and minimize their ability to influence any election to the ICON board as well, because the whole concept of regional diversity gives the opportunity for those representatives on the SOs to present a regional perspective and impact on the decision-making process. You take it away from them as well. So I have to echo Amadeo's concern from a regional standpoint as well.
Don? Don? Don Delage? Okay, skipping
yeah,
Don.
I'm sorry. I was I had the phone on mute and I was talking. I didn't realize it was on mute. I apologize.
All right.
I was not to disturb the Gaddis. I think my comment is I understand all the other comments and I agree with them, but from the point of view of the board, what I would ask Andrew to bring back to the deliberations would be that to focus on this not from an individual point of view. It's not the individual here. We're representing, in most cases, large classes of participants, and so I think the focus should be on what impact any of these changes have on the constituency itself rather than on a particular individual, because all of us, I think, feel pretty strongly about that. That's all my thoughts. Teresa?
Actually, I just was interested in getting two points of clarification. First of all, I'm actually familiar with this kind of procedure and have seen it used in various forums, including universities, when committees need to vote on issues where, let's say, the parent of one of the students is on that committee, et cetera, so they step aside during that voting period. But on the clarification point, is it only the individual who's been nominated who abstains from voting and participating in those discussions, or is it that constituency entirely?
No, it's specific to the individual. In other words, an individual who has a stake in the outcome should not vote.
Okay. And the second question I had is you had mentioned something about temporarily switching
the NC representative. Would that be, can you just clarify that a little bit? Or
I could imagine each constituency having a provision that says, in the event that one of our names council members accepts a nomination to run, the administrative committee or similar body can appoint a temporary representative to the names council.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Consistent with the geographic diversity requirements, of course.
Okay. And that clarifies it. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good idea.
But let me just make the following comment, which is that I understand the practical frustrations that you all are articulating, and Don, somewhat more theoretical ones, I guess. But the basic inspiration for this is that a lot of people who are not on the Names Council have said that they're afraid that the fix is in and that the Names Council is, you know, a small, tight little cabal that's going to always elect its own members. Now, you may say, well, we get elected by the constituencies, and therefore we are more broadly representative. But there is a perception that unless you draw a line between the people doing the electing and the people getting elected, there will be a perception of unfair advantage to those that are currently serving on the Names Council, and corresponding disadvantage to those who are not currently serving on the Names Council. You know, I don't need to overemphasize for ICANN's purposes the significance of the act of electing ICANN directors. And if the feeling is that those who are on the Names Council have significant and essentially unfair advantages over those who are not on the Names Council, it tends to harm the legitimacy of the election result.
Jonathan, you wanted to comment.
And can I join after Jonathan?
Yes, please. Patricio, also.
I'm sorry, could whoever's typing put it on mute? Thanks.
All right, Jonathan.
Yeah, I'm Andrew. I don't know how to phrase this. I think that to suggest that by having anybody who's nominated and chooses to accept the nomination for election to the ICANN board is on the Names Council, not vote in the circumstances you describe, I don't think changes anything.
Yep, I agree. Teresa?
I was in the queue.
I'm sorry, Jonathan, did you finish?
Yes, I finished.
Okay, Teresa?
It's actually Caroline, but I'm going to put myself in the queue after whoever.
Caroline, yes, please.
Okay, thank you. I guess I would just argue that, you know, I see both sides of it, but I think that you're arguing about an unfair advantage versus being on the Names Council or not. But I think that there's also an unfair advantage for constituencies, since these were all developed to represent at least what we feel are currently the known stakeholders or interests. And it goes, I think, to Don's comment about we're representing certain interests, and by eliminating one of our representatives of that interest, I think there's some unfair advantage there. And I would just say that I don't know what the right answer is, you know, which is worse, but I think there's two very strong competing unfair advantages on both sides. And I was wondering also, Andrew, whether that temporary NC is something that could be put in place for this election.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, I would think that it's up to each constituency group to decide how they would want to handle that.
Okay.
But you know, the constituency groups don't have to approve every single change with the ICANN board. They, you know, each has a provision for making changes and modifications. And I think, you know, if the board can do something to help make that easier on the constituency groups, then let's figure out what that is. But you know, I will convey all of the comments. I mean, I'm trying to record them as faithfully as I can. I'll convey them all to the board. I would also encourage everyone to submit comments either formally as constituency groups or as the Names Council or individually, so that the board gets some sense of what the reaction is. The number of comments posted so far is very small.
Patricio?
Yeah.
Ken Stubbs, please put me in the queue.
Sure, Ken, yes.
Yeah. Okay, Patricio.
Thank you. Andrew, I think the reasons you mentioned about personal conflict of interest are really valid. But on the other hand, you have to weigh a number of other issues, like having all constituencies retained their full force at the time of making these important decisions. And I'm not completely sure that for this time around there will be enough time to appoint replacements. Perhaps that should be a rule in the future, but I'm concerned that this is being done. It's still not a rule, it's still being discussed, and elections are very close to us in the future. Perhaps we should not apply this today in case it it is approved, but for the next election. And I'm also concerned that this kind of changes, I don't feel that they are coming in a bottom-up fashion, like the organization as a whole feels that this is a need. It's quite the contrary. I feel that like this is a top-down decision from the board, and I have really seen very little support for it from the general membership, whatever you call it. But most of the comments I've heard are against it.
And
Dennis, did you ask for me?
Yes, Ken.
My comments. Yeah, I think I would have to agree with the previous comment. I also think that if the board is in a position where they're taking this position, I think it would be incumbent on the board to make it clear as to who on the board is taking that position. This is one of the few times where, frankly, I think we need to understand what the logic behind this is. I'm very concerned about the fact that, number one, I agree, it would be very, very difficult for a constituency to change its bylaws at this point in time to allow for a substitution in a short time period. And secondly, I think that the idea of disenfranchising a constituency, even in Don's case, disenfranchising an entire constituency, makes little sense, and I'm very concerned about the global impact of this as well. If you have an ISP from Asia, not only are you who runs you, not only are you disenfranchising Asia, but minimizing the impact the ISPs could have on this election. So,
well, the idea is not to disenfranchise any of the votes of the constituency. The idea is to disenfranchise a particular individual who will be replaced for purposes of that vote.
I understand that, but at this point in time, you're proposing that what we could do is go back and, pardon the expression, do a Chinese fire drill in a very short period of time when the nomination periods are closing and most of the constituencies aren't necessarily set up to have a meeting on an interim basis to get something like this accomplished that quickly. That's the point I'm making.
That's a perfectly legitimate point. It's one I'll convey back to the board. And keep in mind that this is a staff recommendation. This is my recommendation to the board right now. And it's in part top down in the way that you say, although it's in response to comments that we've received from people who are not on the Names Council that are, as I said, afraid that the fix is in and that the Names Council will, choose three of its own without, and give short shrift to everybody who is not on the Names Council, because that's the nature of the way that vote trading and horse trading takes place among constituency groups, which, in fact, should take place among constituency groups. But the intent here is to vindicate just a basic sort of principle of the law, at least that I'm familiar with in the United States, which is that where you have a personal stake in the outcome of a vote in a policymaking body like this, you ought not to vote.
I'd like to respond, if I could, to Andrew there very quickly.
Because we're spending a lot of time on this.
All right, well then.
I wanted to be in the queue as well. I seem to be forgotten. Teresa?
Then forget it.
Ken?
No, that's all right. I'll respond. I'll respond publicly to Andrew through the Names Council mail list.
Okay, Teresa?
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of touch on two points that I think as a Names Council we have a responsibility to think about in sort of considering all this. One is that if there's concerns being raised outside of the Names Council about how this is the voting would go, et cetera, and they're concerned about sort of a capture by the Names Council and all those things, as Andrew alluded to, that's something we have to listen to and take into consideration, obviously. We have a responsibility towards the BNSO and towards the constituencies, and if there's folks outside of the Names Council who have concerns, then we need to hear that. The second thing is, I keep hearing various constituencies saying having a representative to the board. Whoever's on the board is representing the BNSO in its entirety. At least that's my understanding of it.
Indeed.
And so I would, you know, whoever is on the board, at least from my perception, I'd like to see them, you know, having an obligation towards the DNSO entirely. So as Amadeo suggested, you know, having them, you know, make sure that they're aware of the Names Council calls and everything so they're in regular contact with the DNSO and able to understand what the DNSO concerns are, I think would be a primary criteria as part of also their responsibility towards the ICAM board in their representative capacity. So I just throw those out there as things to consider when we're discussing this issue of whether one can vote for oneself or not.
All right. I'd like to close that discussion, if I may, take the chair's privilege and just make a couple of quick comments. One, if this is in reaction, if a board reaction to comments, then I'd like to know who making the comments, and I'd like them routed to the Names Council to be addressed. I'd hate to think that the board is being lobbied by a few individuals and a few comments are influencing things to this degree. Second comment, I have no objection in principle to the intent, but I think changing the rules in the middle of the process is extremely unwise, because I think people might have taken different courses had they known the rules were going to change, and that's inappropriate. And thirdly, just to clarify, Andrew, that an administrative committee of a constituency can get together and appoint a temporary Names Council member purely for the purpose of the election.
Well, that is certainly what I would like to see happen, and if the constituencies don't feel that they have the authority to do that already, then I would say let's figure out if there's a way to go around it. Now, I don't want to make it sound like this is a done deal, because if there's strong objection among the Names Council, or if it's impracticable for some reason, I hope that that will be surfaced to the board quickly so the board can consider that. That's why I posted for public comments, and I hope we'll get some from you all. I'll certainly convey the comments that I've heard today. The cutoff point at the moment for comments is about 4 days from now, the 27th. That's when the board asked that all comments be in. And I think that given the pressing nature of these elections, if there are comments from the Names Council or the constituencies, I hope that we can hear them. My hope is that that the constituency groups won't feel that their bylaws somehow preclude them from, for example, appointing a temporary Names Council representative to vote when one of their representatives has been has accepted the nomination to the board.
Mm-hmm. We don't have that provision in the registers, but we'll try to solve that, if that's the case, by the way.
This is Javier. I'd like to talk.
Yes, Javier, please.
Yeah, I mean, the problem we're facing here is that usually, for example, within a constituency, we have everybody can vote, everybody can run. In this case, the electorate is much smaller than the people on the contrary. The people who can run is much wider than people who can vote. And that's why we are having this technical problem. And I agree with you to try to solve it, if possible, for the elections, otherwise for the next.
Thank you, everybody. I think that we've been asked, and we should note, that I've been asked by Andrew to make sure that the comments are made publicly, and I think the comments that have been made in this teleconference should also be made in open forum. Well, they are in open forum, but again, in response to proposals.
Yeah, and I hope that it's also that the general agreement that no matter what's the final decision, we would really require that this does not impair the voting rights of the constituencies, but just affect at the extreme individuals, but never the constituencies.
Absolutely.
Yes. I also agree with Dennis's observation that the Names Council should be aware of what the concerns are.
Yeah, I'll see if I can convey to the Names Council some sense of what those comments are. We, you know, in general, we don't make people's comments public unless they're sent to a public comment list.
Absolutely.
But I appreciate the need to know what it, you know, who it is that's motivating the change. Let me also just say, from a staff point of view, that this is not the way that we like to go about making significant policy changes like this. Ideally, we would have thought of this 6 months ago. But in the ICANN process, there's considerable chaos at every step of the way. And so our efforts are to try to make things as clear and fair as we can and not at the same time trample settled expectations.
Thank you, Andrew. Can I now move on to the next part of item 9, which is the election process?
Yes. We asked the Berkman Center for advice. I haven't seen that advice. Do we have that advice? And is there someone online from the Berkman Center who can comment on that request? Is Ben there?
I think Ben's not on the call. My understanding is that, I have an affiliation with the Berkman Center, but I have yet to see anything from Jonathan on the question of voting. I've had some discussions with him about it, but I don't think I can convey it as some official opinion.
Okay.
This is Jonathan.
Jonathan, yes?
Not from the Berkman Center, the other one.
Oh, the other Jonathan, right? The other Jonathan, please.
I had a proposal for voting structure that somehow didn't make it to the, not sure how it didn't get up there, but I wonder, I think it's simple, and I wonder if I could put it out for consideration during this portion.
I'd be advised by the teleconference, my reaction would be yes, but does anybody object?
We had a decision on our last teleconference in which if no other proposals were posted before this teleconference, we should apply the method that I have proposed. I don't think we should discuss this any kind of methodology in a teleconference. If anybody has proposals to do, they would have done them in written. This was the deadline for decision. I think we should just go ahead and implement what we have.
There are two
questions. As we decided.
Javier, everything you said, except that we were not applying your method, but you were taking your motion as the basis for discussion, but it was still open for amendments.
I think we have received some. The decision that was made in the last Names Council meeting was that it was going to be used for discussion, but if no method was proposed, if no other method was proposed by today, we would apply that one. I mean, I don't care if it's my method or anything else. I just want one working today. We don't have any other method working by today.
We have, I think, three proposals on the table, and what I understood we agreed was that if we can't come to agreement, the default is your proposal.
What you said, Dennis, on the closing of the call, was that if there was no other proposals, and nobody has done anything during this week, once again, it's been 4 weeks since we decided that we had to do this. And nothing is happening. Making things happen in teleconference is just a waste of time.
All right. Let me take comments. Who wants to comment on this?
There's a question, Dennis, on your saying. You said three proposals. I only have two. Which is the third one?
Well,
yours and Javier's.
I saw on a reference by Javier to a Nigel proposal, but I have missed it myself.
Okay.
I didn't receive anything from Nigel.
Okay.
Nigel decided to merge his with Dennis.
Thanks. So we have basically two, right?
Right. Yeah, that is my understanding. There are two proposals on the table.
Okay.
We have two things, I think. We have a proposal for a methodology, and we have a methodology. If I understand right, what you have, Dennis, is not a mechanism. It's just you propose that we apply single transferable votes.
Oh no,
you don't have a mechanism.
It's absolutely a mechanism.
Dennis, I think it is.
Dennis, Jonathan.
Jonathan.
I wonder if I could ask the Names Council if it will take me literally 30 seconds to explain my thing, and then if people decide they don't want to hear it or vote on it or whatever, fine, but I'd hate to think that it wasn't even listened to before making some decision.
Okay.
I give you 30 seconds for my next talk. Go ahead.
As chair, I'll give you the 30 seconds, Jonathan, but please be brief.
What I suggest is that there be an initial runoff by region. In other words, if there are a number of candidates from the same region, that they run off against each other, resulting in one candidate from each region. And then when you have one candidate from each region, you hold an election and the three top votes get in.
No, thanks.
Okay, so is that the summary of your suggestion, Jonathan?
That's it.
Okay, can I take very briefly, anybody want to comment on that? We have Amadeus comment. No thanks. Anybody else want to comment?
Well, I would like to explain my comment. You can only vote for people from your own region.
No, everybody votes.
Some of us might be thinking
everybody
on voting for people from other regions.
Hold on, everybody. There's a lot of clipping and there are people talking one over the other and neither hearing the other. Can I take a cue, please?
Yeah.
Javier, and then Jonathan.
Michael.
I have Javier, Jonathan, Michael. All right, Javier.
Well, I mean, there's something that we need. We need a mechanism. We need things to be exactly reasoned how they're going to be done. And that's the first issue. Second issue is that each one of us can vote for different people. We can have one vote or three votes. It doesn't matter, but and we can vote for people from different regions. So we would be being forced to vote for a region instead of being able to support other things. And one person from one region might get a lot of support from people from other regions. So a regionalizing election could very much complicate things.
Okay, it's not regionalizing the elections, perhaps. That's the disadvantage of not having it written, and I apologize. All I envision is this, is that since we have to have people from different regions elected, as I understand it, if you have candidates, let us say there's one candidate from Africa, one from Latin America, and three from Europe and five from North America, you would have an initial election where everybody could vote, and everybody would have a vote, and they would simply vote the candidate from North America, they would vote for the candidate from Europe. When those two elections were held, they would then be facing for election one candidate from Latin America, one from Asia, one from Africa, one from North America, and one from Europe, and then everybody could have three votes, and they would pick their first, second, and third choice, and automatically the three people elected will be from different regions.
Michael?
Although I like the idea that has been tabled, I would like to state that it's pretty hard to make an assessment who's coming from a specific region. I think you can make such assessment with regard to candidates, but you cannot make it with regard to those voting. You have to make it for each and everyone, and I think that's not feasible in practice.
Jonathan, do you want to respond?
Well, my answer is simply that you have to do the same thing anyway. If you simply have a collective of all the candidates, you still have to assess which candidate you're going to vote for, regardless of their region. But you leave a problem with how to get regional diversity. If you group the candidates by region, you're not regionalizing the election. By definition, you must only have one candidate from each region. So if you can narrow it down to begin with by having all those regions which have more than one candidate narrow it down to one candidate, and you have to do that anyway.
I'd like to respond. I think you didn't understand, or at least I might not have clearly voiced what I wanted to say. I wanted to say that it's very hard to identify if you have such a process of voting within one region to identify who is in that region. If you get thousands of votes, you have to make such an assessment for everyone who's voting. I think that's not feasible. You can identify a candidate, it's no problem. We have no more than 10, 15, 20 candidates. So everyone, you can make an easy assessment.
If I may cut in, I think Jonathan is saying that the electorate, the people voting in both cases, are the Names Council.
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
It's the Names Council who vote.
That is correct. And
this is in the bylaws.
Yes.
I mean, it seems to me a very simple way. If you give 5, 3, and 1 in the final vote points, we ran that election in our day, and it worked very smoothly.
Now,
may I?
Is there a queue? Who's coming?
Amadeo.
Anybody else want to come in on this?
Richard. Dennis, at the appropriate point, I don't want to get in the middle of this discussion, but I do have a comment or two from the perspective of the ICANN bylaws, and I think I could make maybe a constructive comment or two based on my discussions with the Berkman Center folks.
Thank you, Andrew. You're after Richard. Amadeo?
Okay, Jonathan, the problem with your system is that it's too simple. In fact, here we are voting for three good candidates for the DNSO that represent the DNSO interest in the board as such, and that abide to the geographical diversity rule that nobody contests. Perfect. The only problem is that, imagine, I take just the names council names as, you know, as the wild cards. Imagine that we have Dennis, Patricio, then let's Killian Sean, Michael, and Tony Harris running. If we run only separately with, among regions, we could end up very easily with Dennis, Patricio, and Killian Sean being the three representatives. This would be very, very valid three persons. The only problem is that I am not completely sure that the Names Council would be comfortable electing three people whose, let's say, main interests lie in a single constituency out of the seven. I'm not saying that we have to apply a constituency diversity rule. I am saying that probably we would like having some kind of consideration of this issue as well. And the only way of doing that is probably having a good slate of candidates, only one. So probably being able to decide which is the second one elected, once you know which is the first one elected. So in my view, a mixture of what Javier and Dennis have proposed solves better the problem.
Thank you, Richard. Richard?
Actually, Jonathan's proposal, at least it was simple, and I think that's very good, because I understood it within the first 30 seconds. But effectively, like I would suggest, if we were going to use that kind of model, that you basically giving every names council five initial votes to vote for each of the five ICANN regions, and then have the final five winners, each one, if the names council needs one vote only. So I don't think it's such a bad idea, actually.
Okay, Andrew?
Let me just make a comment, and I hope that this will be helpful. The bylaws provision that governs these elections is very simple. It says that any election to the ICANN board must have the affirmative votes of at least one half of all the members of the names council. So whatever voting mechanism you come up with, the result has to be that the candidate which is elected gets 10 affirmative votes out of the current 19 members of the names council. From the academic literature, there are basically two approaches that we can cluster these proposals together under, leaving aside sort of geographic diversity preludes that Jonathan has been talking about. The first is the kind that's been proposed by Dennis and by Javier. They're versions of the transferable vote. The contrast to that is what's called convention-style voting. The way that convention-style voting works is as follows. Everybody in the Names Council gets one vote, and you take the list of people that have been nominated, and then you hold a vote, each person voting for one candidate. At that point, you rank all the candidates in the order of the votes that they received, and if nobody has 10 affirmative votes, you drop the lowest vote-getting candidate off the list, and then you take a second vote. Then you repeat that process until it narrows down to one candidate that gets 10 affirmative votes. You would do that first for the three-year seat, second for the two-year seat, and third for the one-year seat. Now, by comparison with Dennis's model, there are both disadvantages and advantages. The goal is that you want the candidates to, as closely as possible, command the support of most of the members of the Names Council. The real question between the two models is whether and how you value minority voting, to the extent that there is block minority voting. So both of these models have sort of built-in systems to protect against single majoritarian voting in all cases. But anyway, I just wanted to draw those two models to your attention. Dennis's model is a good one from my perspective. I also like convention-style voting. The only comment that I might make on Dennis's is that normally when you're doing single transferable vote in a small body as opposed to a very large electorate, there's a process for discounting somewhat the second and third place votes after the first place vote getter has been eliminated, after the lowest first vote, first place vote getter has been eliminated off the list. And if I'm already getting into too much detail, forgive me, but if you look over some of the academic work that's been done, in a very small body, there ought to be some way of discounting those votes. And there are a couple of different mechanisms for doing that, including one that I saw on the list very recently from Michael Frumkin, where what you do is you basically divide out the number of remaining votes by the difference between however many votes the first place vote getter got and 10. So again, I'm sorry if that's too much detail, but those are the two models that maybe ought to guide the discussion.
Well, just for a quick point of clarification, there is a weakness in the STV voting model with a small voting population. You get to very small fractional votes eventually.
Yep.
So, but what happens in the Sicilian constituency? The second and third people who got the most number of votes, who were from different regions, did not get elected? Yes, Dennis?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question, Javier.
Out of the people who got most votes in the CCTLD constituency, where you apply this methodology, I understand that the third person, or the person who got the third largest number of votes, who was actually from third different region, was not elected.
That's because of the mechanism takes account of minority preferences. That's especially the point of the mechanism. Not a first-past-the-post mechanism. It's a mechanism that takes account the preferences in order of every voter. That's the sophistication and the beauty of it.
Can I ask you to explain, just because so I can be educated here, after you do the highest number of votes for the first preference, when you say the votes are redistributed, can you just clarify what that means?
Okay. Well, let me give you the first case. The first count is made, and let's say nobody reaches the quota, so the people at the bottom are eliminated. Usually the bottom person is eliminated. Now, their votes would be wasted if something isn't done, and what the mechanism does, it looks at the votes, and it looks at the next preferences, the second preferences in the first round, and the votes are passed to the candidates who are named as the second preference. So, supposing I were to vote for... Jonathan and Don. And Jonathan only gets one vote, my vote, and is at the bottom of the list and is eliminated. Instead of my vote being wasted, the scrutineers look at my vote, they find that my number two preference is Don, and they give that vote to Don.
Okay, thank you.
Right? That's the elimination mechanism. The surplus mechanism is where... Let's suppose that Don gets over the quota, which is explained in a formula, by three votes. So they have 13 votes, let us say. Actually, the quota is quite low in the STV for reasons that are become obvious when you look at it. But there's some surplus votes. So instead of those votes being wasted in the sense that they weren't really necessary to get Don elected, the next preference of all the votes are looked at, and the three surplus votes are apportioned proportionally to the next preference of all the votes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, and then how do you apply regional diversity?
Pardon?
How do you apply regional diversity?
Oh, simply by eliminating the candidates that are from the same region that the one that's elected in the first
right.
place.
You also distribute their votes?
Yes. Absolutely, yes.
May I?
Certainly, please, Amadeo.
The only problem I have with that, then, is that bleedingly complicated for an electorate of 19 people and 3 seats to provide. And, you know, I don't... we are a young democracy here, so we spend lots of years discussing about electoral mechanisms. The bottom line is there are no good and bad mechanisms. It depends. What are your main considerations? Do you want to increase the power of the government and have stronger support? Do you want to... enforce diversity? Do you want to create problems to the mafia, or do you want to collect the mafia to control all the votes in southern Italy? So this is the kind of consideration to make. And here, the consideration is A, we need candidates that represent the DNSO itself. And B, there is a the regional diversity provision. So these are the two things we have to bear in mind. My problem is doing blind votes that perhaps allow more than one seat at each time could bring to a situation where the candidates individually are very good, but the aggregate would be unsatisfactory in this building stage of the DNSO. And this is why I like the convention style, or I like modification, somehow melting on your system and Javier's, you know, to make sure that somehow we select people one by one, and also system that instead of transferring the votes in the way you will have, you count from the very beginning your second and third preferences as one third and one half of the vote if you want.
I agree with Amadeo, Tony Harris.
Tony, yes.
And if I could just make one comment, one of the advantages of convention-style voting traditionally has been that your second-choice vote may be different depending on how other people vote. When you see who the vote-getters are, you may or may not want to adjust your voting strategically depending on what other people seem like they're going to do.
If I may, as chair, take chair's privilege and comment, I actually, Andrew, you say that the academic literature says that the convention style, as you've outlined, is sound. It provides a reasonable result, and it's not subject to excessive gaming or anything like that. Is that what you said?
Well, it's an acceptable result. I mean, it's neither more or less valid than yours. I think that the bottom line is it tends to be more majoritarian and less protective of minority rights. However, it may provide there may be sort of greater transparency to it than ranked voting.
My reaction to it, again speaking not as the chair, is that it is beautifully simple, and it's dead easy to understand, and everybody has one vote, and if it is sound, and it's your understanding the Berkman Center would consider it reasonably sound, I would happily yield my proposal to such a simple one vote, one person, convention style, ranked vote with the criterion of 10 votes to elect a candidate. I think that's probably good enough to be going along with.
I would like to come in.
Yep. Javier, yes, please.
Michael.
I like the convention style mechanism. However, I think whatever mechanism we will adopt finally, we need to take care of the problem that given that we have only a few representatives from some regions, we may need to take care of the fact that the other regions, in fact, will vote on the representatives for such regions. For example, I think we have only one representative from South America. That means, in fact, Americans and Europeans will select the representative for South America, if any. And I think there needs to be a provision or an additional mechanism that's taking care of the fact that the South America should, in the first place, have minority protection.
May I speak to that?
Well, Michael first, and then Amadei. Michael?
Yeah, that's been me.
That was Michael.
Michael? I take your part. I'm getting confused. Amadei, yes, please.
Just one small amendment. I don't think the Latin Americans have to elect their representative. We want that the DNSO have represented from different regions, but we all are the DNSO. We all should be voting for the best three we can elect coming from different regions. And I think the problem is here that most probably, as there are more North Americans and Europeans here, most probably the first ones to be elected would be North Americans and Europeans. But automatically, for the next seat, there will be no Europeans or no North American running. And then we all were voting for the other regions. So this mechanism also allows for that. Yeah? And I refuse the idea that the Latin American should elect the Latin American representative and the European should elect the European representative.
I do not think that we will have a lack of geographical representativeness. But the problem will be that, in fact, still the Europeans and the Americans will select the candidate from South America. That's a fact, because we will still be eligible to vote.
Yes, just a question of clarification, Andrew. Presumably after the round which elects the first candidate, any candidate who's a citizen of the same region will then have to, any nominate, any candidate will have to drop out.
That's right. What you do is you take the list of nominees and you strike out those that are from the same region as the director or directors that have already been elected.
In effect, much the same as Jonathan proposes, really, in that, well, no, it's not. I beg your pardon. Withdraw that.
No, it's not. It's not exactly the same,
yeah.
Because you are allowed to change your vote in the second time.
My sense is that if the Berkman Center were recommending that, I would be very happy to take that very simple system and recommend it to the Names Council. I'd like comment on that.
I would like knowing Javier's comments, that as being the only, the other one with a proposal on the table.
I mean, there's one thing that is very important, how we want to vote. If we want to vote by email, we have to have one single time, which is what I have proposed. Each one of us casts 3 votes by email, and then at the end of the week, they are counted. It's the simplest thing that we can do. We do not need a complicated mechanism. We do not need to spend hours on the phone discussing this issue. We need something simple. If we want to vote on any other system which is interactive, we'll have to do it in a phone call,
or a chat, or anything else.
Or it would be much more complicated. Let's make it simple.
Well, if you want a single round vote, then I would have to say that the strength of what I propose, I haven't seen your response to what I think are the weaknesses of what you propose.
The weaknesses to what I propose?
Yeah, I mean, there is a definite weakness, in my view, that votes are wasted. Aren't they?
In every election, the votes are wasted. I mean, when you vote for people, when in a constituency, people vote, there's a majority and there's a minority. And people vote, and some people win, some people lose.
You misunderstand.
You can make it very complicated. We can spend days and days and days deciding how it's more fair. I don't think your system is more fair. It's obviously, in your constituency, it has elected people who got less votes than other people.
That's not true. I think it's more fair to elect people with more votes,
as you usually do in any country elections.
I'm afraid I have to object to that. That's simply not true.
Okay, the problem is not whether we waste votes or not. The problem is whether, and I repeat my question, do we want to do some kind of one-time blind election and simply apply the geographical diversity rule wherever it comes, or as I said, and I think I heard Tony Harris somehow seconding, we want to have the chance to perhaps rearrange our voting once we know who's the first and the second candidate. So we want one vote for all, or we want a repeated game somehow.
Can I take that point then? Because I think that's the first decision that we have to try and indicate. As Javier has pointed out, that if we have a convention-style voting, we need rounds of voting, and it'll take time. It's not a once-off voting. Can I take the views? This is not a vote, folks. This is just a poll. Can I take the views of the members on the telephone conference as to whether we want a single-shot vote or whether we want rounds of voting where each round can be a different vote based on the results of the last one? Ken, can I do, well, let's start from the... From who's on the list? Caroline, you there?
Yes.
Which you think we should do?
The round.
The round.
Yes.
Jonathan.
I guess if that's the choice, then I'd go with round.
Okay. Well, this is just a poll for indication. Ken. Ken. Ken.
It's abstaining.
Richard.
Actually, neither one makes that much difference. I would like to see what the Berkman Center has to provide us, so I would abstain.
Okay.
One is okay.
Amadeo?
Rounds.
Is Catherine there? I don't think
yes.
so.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Yes.
I think I would prefer single round or something more limited than kind of unlimited multiple rounds. I think there will be trouble getting people's attention and keeping it through elections. It seems to make sense for people to be meeting in person, but not by the means that we're communicating.
Okay. YJ? No. Michael?
If it's
drill stand to the conventional style, I would prefer rounds.
I don't think Hirofuma is there, is he?
Hirofuma, yeah.
Hello, yes, welcome.
I prefer single round.
Single. Okay, Antonio?
Rounds.
Don?
Rounds, and I was impressed by the description of the convention voting.
Teresa?
I'm kind of with Richard. I'm interested in hearing what the Berkman Center has to offer. I was likewise impressed with the conventional one, probably because I understood it.
Have you?
How many times I tried this single transfer voting thing, I still don't understand, but I'll work on that.
Thank you, Teresa. Javier?
Single round.
John? John England? Patricio?
Multiple rounds.
And I would abstain in the sense, because I'd like to hear what the Berkman Center says as well, but I'm also equally impressed by the simplicity of the convention style. Now, if I were indicative, there are nine people who didn't vote for one reason or another, either because they abstained or are not present. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 for rounds of voting, and there were 1, 2, 3, 4 a single vote. Please advise me, how do you think we should proceed on this, folks?
We had some kind of agreement that we had the teleconference today, and we allow ourselves until 24 hours for completing the process. But I think that we should take very soon a decision on that. And even a bad decision is better than no decision, because if we take a bad decision and the system proves to be really rotten, I hope that both the Names Council and the board will be aware of that and invalidate the elections.
Caroline, when would we get this Berkman Center, like a written report, or have we gotten it? Or
I think you are unlikely to get an extensive analysis from the Berkman Center.
Perhaps a call with Jonathan.
Summarize it in an email, or
I mean, here's what I can say: the conclusion of the Berkman Center is going to be that Dennis's STV proposal and convention-style voting are both valid, legitimate ways of going about it. The pros and cons are pretty straightforward, which is that STV voting tends to be more complicated and less transparent, but theoretically more protective of minority views. Convention-style voting tends to be simpler, more transparent, and does a better job of encouraging coalition building because of the way that you can shift your preferences according to the preferences of others. But it does, as Javier points out, require that you be there on the phone or by email or in chat or however you do it. I mean, it's called convention style because it typically takes place in a convention room. But it is admirably simple and straightforward.
Andrew, can I ask this?
Regarding the conclusions, is that true that STV tends to be more efficient the larger the electorate is?
That's correct. The larger the electorate, the more efficient STV is. STV is not usually used in a body as small as the Names Council.
Oh, sorry, STV, single transferable vote, yeah, because
yeah.
We are using all these kind of strange acronyms.
That's right. Dennis's model is generally accepted to be an extremely fair one when you're talking about a very large electorate with a lot of preferences that you need to aggregate. It's generally thought to be more likely to produce odd results when the electorate is small.
Dennis, this is Don Talajmi.
Yes. Let me take a cue, Don, just a moment. Don, who else?
Kathy.
Who else? Don, Kathy?
Lisa.
Teresa, sorry, Teresa, you were clipped off there. Anybody else? Okay, Don?
Yes, I happen to know of a tool used for deliberation and voting that allows asynchronous online interaction plus viewing by everybody of what the state of play is for a given election that I have, in fact, betaed, that I might be able to talk the owner of the tool into letting us all take a look at very quickly. It happens to be online, and we get a password to review it. You might find it, in fact, allowed you to do this activity. My recollection is that it would probably allow you to do this activity by email. web-based tool.
For chat, nonetheless.
Kathy?
I wanted to ask Andrew if there was any kind of case study that had been done of the convention-style voting in an electronic arena, because it seems to make sense in person, but it also there's time interspersed so that people can build the coalitions.
Well, exactly.
Right,
that's an excellent point. I'm not aware of any formal study that's been done. I can take a look around and see if I can come up with anything, but I wouldn't count on finding anything in the literature that's going to throw light on that.
We'd probably be the first electronic experimentation of this.
Exactly.
And
no matter what we do, we are the first experience.
Well, and I think you shouldn't necessarily overestimate the amount of time that it would take to do this on a teleconference. I mean, if you could get everybody onto the teleconference, it's basically just a question of reading through the list of names, calling out the results, and doing it again.
Has it been decided whether ballots are open or closed?
Yes. Open at the end, closed during.
So you can't vote on the teleconference?
But you can send email, and, you know, I think that it's not that difficult. All of us spend some time each day in the email, so we can have the rounds. I mean, we can have the teleconference, discuss that, and then go by email. In 2 days' time, have a new teleconference, if necessary, or just a chat, or simply have the results and vote for the second. And the third day, again, see the results. I mean, allow something like 24 hours to meet the worldwide basis in time zones and vote again. All of us are reading email each day. We are the problem with what you say, the impact of a convention in electronic. I mean, it depends whether this is a constituency. Or this is a very reduced group of only 19 people. Things tend to be simpler with a small electorate.
I agree, but I think that there may be a mathematical way. I refer this to our mathematician, Don, to figure out what the worst-case scenario would be. And how many rounds, on the worst-case scenario, how many rounds it would take to get to 10?
We will not know until we know the number of nominees.
Yeah, the number of nominees minus 1 is the number of rounds you could, or I guess minus 2 is the number of rounds you could potentially have.
Grace, do you want to come in?
Yeah, I know that we've referred to the conventional one and to Dennis's proposal. Can somebody just give me some insight on what Javier had proposed? How is that different, and for what types of elections is that generally used for? Is that a large group, small group? I'm primarily using this to educate myself, but also to try to figure out if there's something in between the two that we might be able to use.
May I try to answer that? It's very adequate for small groups when you don't have many different outcomes to be considered, as you're voting only once, and you cannot recorrect your votes or taking your second choices there. And in a situation where we have diversity of interest and especially geographical diversity, it's not bad, but perhaps not perfect.
Andrew, do you want to comment on that?
Well, I'm not sure that I actually understand Javier's. It's a little different, I guess, from anything that I'm familiar with in practice.
No, actually, it's the same system that we're using for the business constituency. It's just 3 votes each. You take the largest number of votes, who's elected, then you take the people from this region out. That the next person with the largest number of votes is elected. You take people from that region out also. And then the next person with the largest number of votes. I mean, it's the simplest thing you can think of.
Well, I guess that my only qualm about it is that it's difficult to square that with the bylaws requirement that you have to have, that the winning candidate has to have the affirmative votes.
Okay, and then I consulted with Joe Sims. And basically, once we have finished the election, the whole names council confirms those 3 people.
That's the way to do it, if the Names Council votes to confirm. I mean, what happens if the Names Council...
Well, then they're not
majority of the
names. Having an election.
If the winning candidate gets 7 votes and the other 12 are opposed, I could see the other 12 voting against confirming, and then I'm not sure where you are.
That's something the Names Council decided in the last call, that we would do it that way, that we would have an election, and then we would have a confirmation vote for all 3 candidates at the same time.
Yeah, but what Andrew says is true. this confirmation vote could fail. That's a fact. It could fail if people simply are not happy with the three because they were not voting them. We agreed to have the vote, not to vote in favor. You cannot bind the names council members, especially those who are not here yet, to vote in favor. But well, in that case, Andrew, simply you don't have three boards members. You have to start again voting.
Javier, your system is perfectly legitimate. The only thing I would say, maybe from an academic standpoint, is that it's not the one that's most likely to produce consensus results or to produce a result that really does command the affirmative support of more than half the names council.
Janice, John.
Yes, Don. Let me answer to that. I really don't care what system we use. My main concern is that we have to decide on that today.
Yeah, this is. I just wanted to clarify. I'm not trying to indicate any preference for any. I'm just trying to understand them at this point.
I think that single transfer vote is far too complicated. It's not transparent enough for this kind of body. I haven't really finished understanding it. But there's something that is very clear to me that nobody else outside of these people who vote would understand it.
And in a way, to clarify then, Javier's system is a version of convention style where you stop the voting after the first round.
Yeah, exactly.
Dennis? Yeah, and I don't care if we go for any other method. We just have to decide here. I mean, if we decide for convention style, it's perfectly fine with me. If we decide for that, it's fine with me. But we have set the deadline for today.
Okay.
So I don't think we have any more time for consultation with anybody. We need to decide today what style of voting we're going to use, and we need to have the specific rules, which we don't have,
Janet,
for that type of voting within the next 2 days.
Okay. I have a queue, Javier, please.
Jonathan.
Who's on the queue?
Jonathan.
Jonathan.
Yes. Can I make one possible suggestion? Although heresy, is there any possibility that we could get together for this election, or a good number of us could get together in one spot at one time physically, and then those who can't could vote electronically? Maybe that would answer the concerns about convention style. It's not my first choice, but if that's the consensus, if we were to meet somewhere like New York or Washington, that there's the largest number of names council members can get there easily, and a lot of other people might get there, and maybe that will solve the problem. I don't know, maybe that's not possible.
Do we have a budget?
I throw it at. No, I understand. I'm just simply saying, if you could get half the people or more in one room from different constituencies, and the others were on electronically, the thing starts to make more sense. I mean, I echo Kathy's concern. I don't dislike convention-style voting, but I see the bunch of us sitting in different spots with our machines. Very difficult to do consensus building or even to confer with your own constituency.
Jonathan, if I could just respond. I'm sorry, but to try to get people to a central location physically, I just don't know how we could do that. And then those that are there physically, that's not fair to everybody else who's not able. So we need to try to do this either electronically or by phone.
We're working for the internet. If we fail, shame on us.
Well, there is
an alternative. Hello, Tony Harris here.
Yes, Tony.
One thing you could do would be a 3 or 4 point video conference, so people would see each other and talk.
Why do you?
You know, like one in Europe, one in the U.S., one in Latin America. And people get to the nearest point.
Can we make things simple? I mean, we are really complicating things as much as we can.
Okay.
Let's try to make it simple.
Caroline, I guess I agree that there has to be some simplicity, but I also think that what we're being asked to vote on is very important. So I don't necessarily want to jeopardize.
Yeah, but anyway, remember that we have 1 week for the vote, and in 1 week we have plenty of time to run 3, 4 rounds, no problem.
Absolutely, in my view.
That's true.
And I am personally willing.
We are 19 people who should show some kind of commitment to these important elections.
Okay, let's go for it. Come on, guys, let's go for the round.
Well, I want to try and take the sense of the meeting here. I think there's a sense that we should go for rounds. I think there is a sense that we should, that the simplicity of what Andrew has proposed is excellent. I certainly am willing to yield my proposal in favor of it. I think there is a problem of actually executing it, but then we have a whole week, as Amadeo points out, and we should be able to sort that out. I think we should go for it, as I think that was Jonathan was saying. We should go for the convention style, and we should get detailed advice from the Berkman Center through Andrew on exactly how it works and schedule the rounds and make it happen.
And I have a suggestion. I would suggest to schedule from now on a teleconference on October 9th with all the nominees to answer questions.
I think that's an excellent idea.
That's a detail. If we decide to go for convention, which I also support, if it's going to be the only consensus point that we can reach, we need to have rules, specific rules on how this is going to be run. And we need them immediately because we need to publish them.
Okay. So Andrew, can you help us there?
Can I ask a question, Kathy?
Certainly. Who's that?
Is this Andrew? Is this the first time, as everyone knows, I've been working on some other issues, so my apologies. Is this the first time that Andrew's convention-style voting has been proposed is on this conference call? So does that mean that everyone not on this conference call hasn't even heard about this?
Sorry about that. Yes, the name, not the idea. I've been asking for multiple rounds with the ability to change the vote in each round and that it's not automatically transferred from your first vote as an STV. So the idea was there.
But Caroline, you're correct. This is the first time that this has been exposed at this level of detail.
Yeah.
Would it be inappropriate to... there are two members of my constituency who are not on this call, and we do have 24 hours to wrap it up, to hold about 24 hours from now.
It was our intent that we have 24 hours from now, yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
We agreed that on last telecom.
Yeah, but on the methodology, at the same time, we need to have a methodology to run the selections.
Yeah.
Using this. Who's going to do that?
Andrew?
Well, I can sketch out... But I won't commit to giving you the full-scale details because I got to get on a plane in about an hour that's going to take me out for about 8 hours. So in this next hour, however, I can certainly sit down and sketch out the rules as I think I would apply them and just leave it for your consideration at that point.
That would be very helpful if you could do that. I know that's an imposition. Is there someone in the Berkman Center that you could also get involved in this in case we need to ask them about it as well?
Yeah, I'll try to do that. I have an acute awareness of the difficulty of getting Jonathan Zittrain's time. So I'll see what I can do, but I think that the council should try to proceed not on the assumption that they're going to get meaningful assistance from the Berkman Center within the next 24 hours.
But we will get from you.
But you will
may I suggest also that Javier, Dennis, and the Secretariat Elizabeth volunteer to work on the details over the weekend next Monday?
Absolutely, as far as I'm concerned. Javier?
I'll be happy to do that, but I like to work by default, in the sense that if we post something and nobody comes out with objections, then by Monday we will post it
after
the election mechanism.
Fair enough. Elizabeth?
May I suggest something? As I told at the beginning of the telecoms, I am in Warsaw, and I have a little bit more difficulties than in Paris to call Andrew. I would suggest, Andrew, that we work on that just after telecoms together and try to figure out how to do it, and then we send a short summary to Names Council for consideration. Do you accept it, Andrew?
Fine by me.
Excellent. Okay, perfect. Perfect. So Elizabeth and Andrew, you're going to have a telephone conversation now, and out of that, Andrew, an email will come describing as best you can the process.
Correct.
Yes, because I think that Xavier's point is extremely important. We committed to have a solution by tomorrow. So just in view of speeding up, I will discuss with Andrew a little bit later, and we will try to have something within a few hours and go.
A clear skeleton of how this would provide, and then we put the flesh on the bones.
Okay.
I agree with that. We're getting, at least Xavier and I are getting questions from the constituency members as far as, you know, what the procedure is going to be. We need to post something.
I'll just say that
I need something for the registered constituency. We don't have any administrative committee. We don't have any mechanism for having alternates or substitute members, and we are in the middle of the elections, we cannot change the rules right now, who could I call or discuss a method with the board to make sure that in case some of our newly elected names council members are nominated, we don't waste one seat during the elections?
Can you take that up afterwards?
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, because if anybody wants to talk about that sort of stuff, I suggest we take it up offline.
Okay. Keep in mind, it's now just gone 4 o'clock. We've gone beyond 2 hours, but we did get through the two critical items on our agenda.
And can you say what are the next steps for us? So we're going to get one proposal, and then are we voting on the one proposal or all three?
We're voting, I hope, on one proposal.
Okay.
You are objecting to the proposal somehow. If nobody objects, there are no serious objections, it's supposed to be accepted.
Okay. Exactly.
Elizabeth will send the closing time for objections with all these GMT variations, yeah?
So the time for objections will be Monday?
No, Sunday.
I would agree for Sunday because on Sunday afternoon, Monday and Tuesday, we are holding center meeting in Warsaw, and I will be simply very busy. So if you accept Sunday morning, Central European time, it's okay for me.
That sounds fair.
Provided that we are in a position to publish that on Monday morning, that's okay, I think, yeah?
Could I ask all those constituency members who have colleagues who are missing on this phone call, Catherine in particular, you, since Raoul and YJ are not there, to make sure that all the other members of the Names Council are notified and alerted to the fact that we will be looking for their input by Sunday morning, Central European time.
I'll be happy to do that.
Dennis, this is Teresa. I need to get off to get on to another call.
Right.
So if there's any other voting issues, then I transfer my vote to Javier.
No, I'd like to close it now because I think after 2 hours we're exhausted.
I think it's a small question, which I guess everybody agrees. Is there any objection to appoint Nick Quaino as the next GA for Los Angeles? He has accepted the proposal, and he also asked to have a help from a co-chair from within the Names Council, because this will help starting the discussion on the mailing list regarding the agenda.
I think that's fine. If it's any help, I'll volunteer to be a co-chair if anybody wants me to, because I do have some experience in this area, but that's an offer.
I also asked Jonathan Cohen to be the co-chair in the sense that he was the Names Council chair, it would increase coordination. But anyway, let's go by rounds. Motion on the table that Nick Weiner is selected as General Assembly Chair for Los Angeles.
I'll second that. Dennis Jennings speaking here. Can we have a quick run through who's still on the list?
Hey, that's fine. This is Teresa.
Fine, Jonathan.
I agree, Patricio.
Kathy, yes.
I agree, Tony Harris.
I agree,
Richard. RJ had seconded that in the mailing list,
yeah.
In fact.
I agree, Richard.
I agree, Michael. Okay, consensus.
Consensus. And then we have two volunteers. Jonathan, are you volunteering to also co-chair with Nick Weiner?
Yeah.
The General Assembly?
Yeah.
Oh, then we have two candidates, and perhaps we could solve that in the next teleconference or in the mailing list, because that will be more complicated, I guess, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. May I have one suggestion, please? I would like we decide today, before we leave, the next teleconference.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for reminding me. That's exactly right. Should we have one next week, folks?
Yes, better.
I would say yes.
So how about the same time next week, Thursday?
It's the 30th?
The 30th?
I wouldn't have been excited.
Okay.
Michael? Yeah, that's fine. Same time?
Same time. It is a good time. I have another question, by the way. Who is going to chair the next teleconference, and who is going to establish agenda? Do you accept I establish agenda with all reminding points?
I think that's fine for the continuing agenda. Yeah. Elizabeth, yes.
That's
the press conference, as I said, I think that in Santiago we agreed that Dennis was chairing the teleconferences until Los Angeles, so we have a sense of continuity here, and we don't run too many experiments.
I agree with you, but I am here in neutral position. That's the reason for which I provided who was chairing until today, and to have some equilibrium between constituencies.
I think that's not the point, Elizabeth. I think the point is that these telephone conferences seem to be working. I hope nobody disagrees with that, and I'd be very happy to continue to act as chair if nobody objects.
I encourage you to do that because, in fact, as we learned in Santiago, this is also an exercise, and we change each time. We spend more time learning than running.
I would strongly support that. I totally agree as well.
Okay. Yes, I agree too.
I agree.
No consensus.
Okay, and also let's think, Elizabeth, just be aware that we have a telecom from the 30th, and also that we should prepare a teleconference on the 9th with the new names council members and then the nominees. So probably a two-step, because
yes,
there will be many new names council members on the 9th.
Yes.
Yes, I agree with you. Thank you, Amanda, for reminding that.
The 9th is Saturday.
Saturday.
Yes.
Can we put this on our agenda, please, for the next meeting? We're 10 minutes over time. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm exhausted. And I think we're losing people.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Liz, good night
thank
and good
you.
Morning, and thank you, everybody,
morning.
For your help.
Please revive the line, please. Andrew.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Good night.
Andrew.
Yeah, here, Elizabeth.
Okay, just because I am, you know, I am calling from somebody else's office using my French telecom phone card, and it is extremely difficult to do anything. So, thank you very much. How do we proceed?
Well, I think the easiest, is it just you and me? Is anybody else with us still?
Probably we are webcasted. So, if you accept, call... I don't know the number here. Please give me your phone number and I will call you.
That's fine.
Because it is not necessary to be webcasted.
Right. Hang on just a second and I will give you that phone number. I'm actually in California right now.
It doesn't matter. It is long distance.
Okay. It's U.S. area code 650.
650.
854.
854.
2108.
2108. Okay, I am doing it, and I need probably 1 minute to dial 30 digits.
I'll talk to you in a moment.